This is episode number 110 of your favorite podcast and mine, Luge Championship. Angelo, how are you this week?
I'm good. Happy weekend, Brent. And congratulations on your fourth straight money finish this year, finishing third. So great news for you. That's the good news. The downside is you're having some computer problems this morning.
Yeah, it's as always, right? It's always, it seems to be when we try to shoot this podcast, I have to go to my backup computer, then go to my backup computer or something. I have no idea what's going on here. So the off season, instead of doing training, I'll try to just work out my tech issues.
We should charge a tax on the league fee. Like everyone has to throw in another couple $100 and then we can upgrade the studio.
Oh, that would be good. Yeah, we had some good feedback on the studio from last week. They liked it. They liked how comfy it was and how inviting it was. But yeah, we can definitely upgrade some in some areas and technologies first thing.
Well, it was also nice. It was actually nice to to have some other voices. Maybe next year we'll do like an interview series where we try to get each of the other 10 managers in at points throughout the year to do a little chat.
Yeah, I like that idea. And that was kind of like the purpose of this week's episode is to sit down with Robke and go through, some of the highlights of his season. But he's lost in Montreal right now.
Yeah, that's right. So we're still going to talk about his win. We need to. We just unfortunately can't interview him. So last we saw or heard from him, he was in the Chinatown area of Montreal and apparently treating everyone to some duck, apparently.
Yeah, like Peking duck or something like that. Yeah, that's great. Good on him.
I think that's a great way to spend the winnings, like we've talked about. So Blair had to spend his on getting that old tree taken down. Remember that rotted tree?
Yeah, I remember that. That was epic. As soon as he won, the next day it was gone.
Yeah,
you bought a purse.
I didn't, but the winnings did. How about you? When you won last year, where did it go to?
I think it went into car repairs. To be honest with you, I think my car broke down quickly after that or something. It was something like that. It was either car repairs or some other like frustrating use of money. So yeah,
It's always nice, to get some bonus money and then use it on something that you absolutely don't enjoy.
Yeah, or didn't intend on spending it on you.
And that's why I think Robke set the tone, because I think he enjoyed the duck last night from all
sides. Yeah, so and look how quickly he spent it. So before anything could go wrong,
money out.
Gone.
In terms of NHL news, let's talk a little bit about playoffs. We're going to do some playoff predictions. Luge news, there's nothing to talk about except Robke won it. So we're going to talk about his season a little bit. We'll skip who's hot, who's not, because who cares? The season's done. We'll use winners, losers just to highlight Zoltok's dominant season. And then our main topic, again, throughout the show, we're going to sprinkle praise to Zoltok for winning his first ever Keith Primeau Cup. But we're also going to take a look at the preliminary keepers list that was finalized and sent out yesterday.
Yeah, which we'll talk about because there was one glaring absence there, which we're not going to talk about right at this moment. But there was a glaring absence, and I'm wondering if other managers caught that as well. But before we get to that main topic, let's get into the NHL news, which is the NHL is all about the playoffs now, started last night. We're in the midst of Leaf Nation territory, I guess. So what did you think of that game last night, Boston-Toronto?
Well, I didn't watch it, and I'll be honest with you, I tend not to watch Toronto play in the playoffs because I care, I don't care how they do. They can win the Stanley Cup, I don't care. It's more having to listen to their fans. That's what that's what really gets to me, or that's where I find my enjoyment. So I think a 5-1 loss was really poetic. Now, we know they're going to win the next game, and we're going to talk about their resilience and coming home and sending a message, and ultimately – this series is going to go to 6 or 7 games, in my opinion, flip a coin. But I do think Toronto actually has the better team. Maybe the goaltending will be the difference. So I'm going to pick Toronto on that one. But did you watch the game?
I did. And for me, it was just, again, flashbacks of every other series that I've seen. And I haven't been around for all of them, obviously, but I've seen between Toronto and Boston, and it was just a complete dominance on Boston. I'm unfortunately I'd like to see the Leafs go a little bit deeper. It's just a more of a hype, I guess, around it, better atmosphere in a sense for the playoffs. I'm picking Boston in this one. Boston in six. I just think they just always seemingly have Toronto's number, and it kind of showed a little bit last night.
Well, I can't believe the pressure on these Leafs players. Like, watching SportsCenter this morning, there were four or five distinct segments about game one. Like, not just like, here's the highlight pack, and then let's quickly talk about the game. There was like commercial break. Now let's go back to Boston and talk to Mark Masters, and then let's go back and talk to this person. So just the amount of pressure on these players to win.
It's like the
Lug. Yep.
It's like the Lug, where there's so
much pressure
to perform.
Yeah, the Leafs are Mike. Choke down the stretch. Anyways, let's go to other series. So let's finish in the East. We saw Carolina Islanders last night. Carolina took that one 3-1. Again, I just watched the highlights. So empty netter to make it 3-1. Islanders almost tied it. There were a couple chances there, but who are you taking?
Sorry, which one? Someone was just making noise in the background, and I lost all of you. Which series?
Carolina Islanders.
Oh, Carolina. Right off the top, for sure.
Yeah, I'm picking Carolina to come out of the East, actually.
Yeah, that one for me is a no-brainer. What about you with Rangers, Washington?
Rangers, and I don't think it'll be much more than four or five games. With Washington's goal differential being like just absolutely horrible, they're like minus 40 goals for against this year. I think the Rangers are just going to walk all over them. So I'm taking Rangers in four on that one. You?
I think that for me, same with the Rangers. I think for me, that was the biggest kind of disappointment to see kind of creep into the playoffs. I was, obviously wasn't rooting for, and we talked about that last week, rooting for Washington to slip in, and it just doesn't make for an interesting series or anything there. So yeah, it's going to be Rangers, if not four, five.
Okay, let's go to the Battle of Florida. We got the Panthers and the Lightning. Who are you taking in that one?
I'm going to take Florida. I'm actually going to take the Panthers on this one. It's going to be interesting. I don't think Tampa is exciting for sure, and they've got Stamkos and Cooch, but I think it might just be the Panthers' time on this.
I agree with you, but just to make the podcast interesting, I'll go with the Lightning. I'm going to say that Kucherov is going to will the team into the second round on that one, and Vasi is going to round into form. And then we got the supporting cast, Stamkos, Point, etc.
Mike needs something to cheer for.
Yeah.
Still a Vasi fan, I'm hearing. So I think that's a good call to pick Tampa in his honor.
All right, let's flip over to the West, Dallas, Vegas.
Ooh, I'm picking Dallas. I gotta go with my players that I've had on my team here, and I think it's Dallas's time to shine. They may just be a favorite in this year. I don't know, but I think they're gonna bump out Vegas.
I think so too. As we saw in Who's Not a few weeks ago, Ottinger is rounding into form, and if you can get a hot goalie at the right time, good things are going to happen in the playoffs. So going Dallas on that one should be an interesting series here. Jets, Colorado.
This one is really interesting. I think you're right. And the Canadian in me wants to pick Winnipeg. I think, like to see them go further into the playoffs, but Colorado is a dangerous team. And when you have McKinnon on it, I'm going to have to side with Colorado in this one. I know that's probably not the betting odds favorite here, but and despite wanting to see Winnipeg move on, I'm picking Colorado.
I'm gonna go Jets, and just the one reason only: Hellebuck versus Georgiev. So I'm picking Jets on that one.
Yeah, that's true.
Now for Vancouver, Nashville, believe it or not, I'm gonna take the Predators. They've been one of the hottest teams in the NHL in the second half of the season.
Yeah,
UC Saros has been playing incredible. Thatcher Demko's just returning from injury, so hasn't had enough games, enough reps, in my opinion. And Vancouver has completely overperformed throughout the season. I think they hit a bit of a wall, and I'm going to go Predators as a dark horse in the West.
Yeah, I there's not much there. I disagree with you, but I'm going to pick Vancouver. I took as the sentimental favorite here. I didn't take Winnipeg and the other choice, but I'm going to pick Vancouver. But it's going to be a scrap for them to move on into the second round for sure. Agree with you. Demko hasn't been back, so he's going to show a little bit of rust, and playoffs are a big deal. Not many not many players on that team, I would think, have some playoff experience. I don't know. Correct me if I'm wrong on that one. So it's a whole new experience for a lot of those players, I'm sure.
All right, let's go Edmonton, LA. I hope it's Edmonton. I really want Connor McDavid to go far. I want to see Connor McDavid go off in a finals. I would watch Connor McDavid go off in a finals. So I'm going to pick Edmonton in that one.
Yeah, I'm as well. You know, LA, for them to get in it this year and have the season that they did, it's a huge success, I think, for that franchise right now. It all really depends on you know, Draisaitl, McDavid, Hyman, and then their goaltending as well, right? Where those players are coming into these games, headspace, and if they're going to elevate things a little bit more, because as we all know, teams you know, crank it up to another level here. So, and Edmonton definitely has to do that too. They lost their last game of the season, so. I'm sure, and against that was against Florida too, so it was against a very good team. But I think that you'll want to see a different Edmonton. I think they're playing tonight. Yeah, is it tonight or Monday?
I don't know. I don't know who's playing night tonight. The Senators are out, so now I become a passive NHL playoff fan.
But you're a McDavid fan, and that's all that matters. And I agree with you. I like to see him go. Far into the playoffs, he's had a fantastic season, and it would be something if you have some heavyweights in the finals like Edmonton. And who would you like to see Edmonton go against in the finals if you're picking from the East?
So I was about to ask you, let's not do the whole bracket because I can't remember who I picked otherwise, but I am going to go, I don't necessarily want to see this, but I think it's going to be Carolina Edmonton in the finals, and I believe that would be a rematch. Didn't Edmonton and Carolina play in the finals?
Yeah, I think so.
I think they might have. So I am going to go Carolina Edmonton, for as ugly as that final sound. In terms of like the finals I would like to see, I would like, in terms of like sexy matchup, I would love to see Boston versus Dallas or Boston versus Colorado. I think that would be an epic final.
Yeah, that would be a good one too. I mean, if you're on the Canadian side, it's obviously Toronto's got to be in that mix there, but I don't think they're going to go, which is going to really be interesting in the offseason for that franchise, I think. The Rangers would be an interesting one too. I mean, I think, you know, yeah. I'd like to see Edmonton up against them maybe, I don't know. But Dallas, you know, Dallas has got a fun team. We don't see enough of them on TV, so, you know, having them highlighted in the finals would be good. You know, it'd be an absolute disaster if two Canadian teams were in the finals for the NHL for ratings. No one would be watching this in the States.
I know, but no one watched Vegas and Florida last year. I'm going to change. I actually would like to, in terms of the team I would like to see, I'm going to change from Boston to the Rangers. I love it when New York is in the finals and that city's on fire for the Rangers. So I'm going to actually say Rangers would be my ideal pick out of the East.
Yeah, anyone that would be. That's true.
All right. So that's NHL news. It's all about the playoffs now. In terms of Lug news, it's all about Robka. We're not going to do who's hot, who's not. So
we have a little bit of Lug news because there's, I would like to say, an emerging controversy about these, like, we've always talked about the ghoul as the shadow pool of Mike, right? We talked about this a number of times and how he has a shadow pool running on the side. But it's really come to light over this last week that we have a number of managers actually in other pools.
That's a good point.
I kind of feel a little bit betrayed in some ways. I kind of feel that just kind of being used. Nick comes to mind, but Bowlby also is in this, I guess it's a playoff one. So it's off season. That's kind of the gray area, but it still feels a little bit dirty to me in that sense. I don't want to get your thoughts on this and as seeing if we actually need to update the Constitution, Commission.
Well, I give Doug a full pass on this for two reasons. As you mentioned, it's a playoff pool and we don't do a playoff pool. I think we tried one year and then no one just bothered watching it. It's a playoff pool, but also the person running that playoff pool is a beer rep, and it's very difficult if you're going to get free beer I mean, we offer a lot in the league, but we don't offer free beer. So Doug is easily influenced. You know, if you dangle a carrot, he's going to take it every time. Just to, you know, this as well as I, you've met him once. You could tell he was take, right? If you throw something out.
Really nice guy, but it seems to me like anytime that there's beer in the question, he's going to settle up to the bar without a doubt.
That's right. So he got lured into the bar with the offer of a Miller Lite. There he was, probably felt uncomfortable doing it, but he actually felt the peer pressure and chose a team. So we're going to give him a pass for both of those reasons. Nick is not getting a pass. I mean, the Dresden boys pretty much have called us on. I think we're up to the task, and I don't know which side Nick would fight on. I would hope it's the Dresden boys because I've seen him before and he's not that intimidating. I would actually match Mike up with him in a one-on-one. But we're ready to go. We're ready to rumble.
So this all came to light because he gave a screenshot of messages coming in, and he has them on WhatsApp as well, right?
Yep, he's basically emulated everything we do.
This is exactly. He's probably, hey boys, I have a great idea. Let's all get on WhatsApp and you know, have a conversation. Hey boys, I have a great idea. Anybody want to start a podcast? Or
why don't we do four keepers? This is a fun pool, but what if we added four keepers and did a draft?
Or like, you know, hey, here's a great thing. Like, I think we should probably write our rules down and call it a constitution and kind of stuff like that. I've been working hard on this. So I'm just getting this sense.
Yeah, why don't we, you know, hey, Dresden guys, I have an idea. Every time that there's something wrong technically with a pool, let's blame it on someone. I don't know. We'll call her Kelsey.
Yeah. I'm just getting a sense here that of a complete authenticity here with Nick, and as I said at the top here, right, it's of the Luke News, yes, it's all about Robka, and I don't want to take anything away from his stellar championship, but I am so glad that he won, because I don't think we can actually let Nick win this pool because of this level of betrayal.
Now I'm getting fired up, and I didn't think I would. I thought I was going to be pretty calm throughout this, but you've stirred something in me. And what this reminds me of, and I'm going to say this, you know, a bit of worlds colliding here, but, you know, do you watch Vanderpump Rules?
No.
Okay. Kelly really enjoys it. And, I would say the boys listening to this, and also, you know, our broader audience, there's a lot of crossover between Vanderpump Rules and the pool. But there's a character, Tom Sandoval, who cheated on his longtime girlfriend, Ariana, with her best friend, Raquel. And yes, I do know a lot about this because I do watch this on a weekly basis. And it's caused a lot of fallout. And to me, this feels like Nick is just the Tom Sandoval of the pool. This is something that resonates with you, even though you don't watch the show.
Yeah, I know nothing of the show, but it's just, you might as well just, you know, replace Tom with Nick here.
Merch and replace.
Yeah, and I don't, you know, without laboring on this, you know, too long here, I just honestly think that we really need to have a review of the Constitution. The founding members of the Lug come together,
you can call it founding fathers, it's okay.
Founding fathers of the Lug come together and really hammer this one out. Because I think we're going down a road, where, you know, we won't be able to recover as a fantasy hockey pool. Just going to lay it out there.
We need a Tom Sandoval rule.
Sandoval rule. Yeah, absolutely. So that's for me, like Luke News. Yep. And we're going to get to Robka here for sure. But we just wanted to just to throw that out, hear what, you know, what other managers think about Nick's betrayal, slap in the face to the Lug. He definitely is not a gentleman. So I don't know how we move on from this. So,
you know, it's pretty obvious we've never met the guys in the Dresden pool, but there's not one gentleman in that entire pool.
No, not at all. Gentlemen in Dresden doesn't even, there's no match there at all. So
I'm assuming he's talking about the town in Germany.
Yeah, I think so. So maybe, yeah, in an international hockey pool, which doesn't make things any better or easier at all. You know, and this is what I really like about this is now we have, we have a competition with another hockey pool going here apparently. So because of Nick, there's this
parallel universe.
There's this parallel universe. Yeah, we're calling dozen boys out here for scrap. It's like I'm envisioning here. That scene in Anchorman where all the reporters come together and just have this massive brawl with like barbed wire and stuff. So I'm thinking that's going to actually happen.
Yeah, have you watched the movie in a while? Do you remember Brick?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Who would be the Brick of the league? It's definitely not Robbie. How about that Wikipedia page thing? We got to get set up.
Yeah. He's quite something. I mean, this is, he's our poet laureate, right? So, Robka's a wordsmith as well too. So those two we're going to charge with actually us having a larger internet presence than we do. But who would be that?
Let's not actually point out a person, but let's point out a scenario. a Brick type move would be trading the best goal scorer and the best overall player in the league for a backup goalie.
Yeah, and then saying afterwards, I like Lamp. So
yeah. All right. Yeah. Okay. Let's get into Robka's season and let's flip over to winners and losers because, you know, we have a breakdown of every single week. And let's talk about while this wasn't a Heisenberg-esque start to finish, it was pretty close. Zoltok started the first week in last place and we weren't surprised because we thought he had a bad draft. Week two jumps up to ninth place. And then week three, he makes his move, a plus 30.5. point change, vaults himself into fourth. The week after, he's up to third with 105 points. And then by week seven, doesn't look back and then runs the table from week seven right through to the end of the pool. With the exception of a midweek blip where Nick moved into first, Robka has dominated since week seven.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say this is in terms of it's not a it's a dominating performance in him in terms of the time he has spent at the top of the table for sure. It's not a dominating performance in terms of the point spread, and we'll get to that in a little bit as well. Again, this is a year that it came down to the wire, which makes things so exciting. You know, we've had years in the past where, you know, really in the last month it was wrapped up, right? And I think you might have had one of those seasons here. You hold the record for the biggest points, don't you?
Yeah,
so I think there's a couple seasons like you did, and I'm sure Blair, you know, in one of his three championships as well, we know that Robbie Warham doesn't share one of that. I think there was a tie there that one year, but anyways, when it comes down to it, you know, it's a dominating performance for differing reasons this year for sure. And whoops, I just hit my mic. And when you look at his season here, I want to actually pull in when do you think, or if you could pinpoint actually when you knew kind of like he has this. Was there a moment this year when you take a look at Robka's season that, you know, was, if it was a trade, if it was, you know, the kind of fighting the temptation to do a trade? I don't know. What do you think in terms of a special moment perhaps that you could identify that you knew, you know, he's the real deal and then he has this?
Well, there are two moments for me, and one was not obvious. The second one was very obvious. So I'm going to go back to his draft because that's the one that was not obvious. If you look at his draft, it's a tale of two drafts. The first half is really strong. The second half is terrible. So I think really the first, in looking back at this, the first thing that Robka did right was he recognized the players on his team who weren't going to be very good fantasy players. And we have this tendency to hold on to our draft picks too long. He got rid of them almost immediately. So let's just look at his draft. Samsonov.
Do a recap down on who he went into. Do a recap down on his keepers.
Samsonov, Demko, Hintz, Nylander were his keepers. Three of four were amazing. He goes in and gets Bobrovsky for $44. Waits till the 54th or 53rd bid. So Bobrovsky was put up early, but he got him for nothing. Ended up being the number one ranked goalie this season, and he did not trade him at any point. Sebastian Aho was really strong. We know the season Artemi Panarin had. Brandon Montour was injured for a while, came back, was a good player. So that part of the draft was brilliant. And then you flip to the second half. Dylan Cousins, yeah. Trevor Zegras, those are two misses. Noah Dobson was golden, amazing. Arturo Lekkonen was good. Akira Schmid, Adam Larson, Dawson Mercer, Jake Wallman, all bad $1 picks. But he didn't hold on to them. He got rid of them. So point number one is he made the right ad drops with free agency, and that set him up for him winning the pool. And then the second point to me was in January. He didn't wait. He wanted to wait, but he did not wait to basically bring in a bunch of insurance policies into his team. So the big trade he made with me where he got Kucherov, Hedman, and I don't remember who else right now, but he gave up Demko and Dobson where I was able to get two keepers. He won that trade outright. I got a couple keepers from it, but that's in January when he started making the moves and forced everyone else to come in and make moves as well. So those are the two moments in January when he started making his monster trades, and he made a couple of them. And then at the start of the season, very wisely not being married to those players who weren't performing early on. What did you see as his keys to winning?
Well, I said it's interesting. Like, so I look at his draft. I think it comes down to the point for me was his, and we have to understand how close this was. So if we flip over to the standings, this pool was won or lost for me. You know, is won by Robka, but it was lost on power play points. Okay. So power play points. There was only a 4-point lead of Robka. Robka had 12. Nick had 11, but there was only 4 points separating them on that. The other one, I believe, was game winning goals. There was two that separated that. So for me, this pool was won or lost, depending on how you're looking at it, on power play points and game-winning goals. So when I look back, I have to agree with you on this one, Angelo. I think it's his deal with you that allowed him at least to maintain that coming into the end of the season, the leads in those two categories. Everything else, like it was close for sure in other categories, but when we're really talking out how close it was, I think we're talking about Cooch being obviously the game changer for him, I think, in that deal. And I think doing it early, as you said, was one thing that allowed him to win it this year.
Yeah, and when you put it that way, there was also an element of luck. Like, three more game winning goals in the several hundred games you get, completely achievable for Nick. And had he won those, he actually might have won the pool.
Yeah. And this is, again, when it comes down to it, like, so, you know, shutouts, Robka had one less than Nick in that category. Goals against was so close as well. Robka was just a little bit ahead of him on that. Save percentage, there was a bit of a separation, and that's always a hard one to come up. But again, this is the second season in a row that Nick's lost the pool by 1.5 points. All right, so you know he's come so very close. So we've talked about Robka, but I mean, and to highlight what Robka did right, and you know, let's look back at Nick's season here too. You know, he was competitive for sure. Obviously, like, he finished second, and then if we go back into the draft recap and take a look at him, let's kind of do the same thing, because and I think in highlighting Nick, we're also going to show some of the right things that Robka did as well, just to hold on to that lead.
Well, Nick and Robka had similar drafts. I think that's why we ranked them so low in the season, because again, so Nick, Evan Bouchard, David Pasternak, Hamilton, who got injured, too bad, but good keeper, and MacKinnon. His base was already there. We didn't realize that having Pasternak and MacKinnon and Bouchard set him up way ahead of any other. He had the best keepers when you look back on it now. He picks up Josi, Rantanen. DeBrincat was a miss, but I think anyone would have bid on him. Gustafsson was a bit of a miss. And then it just went south for him. So Huberto, Lukanen, who had a good season in the end. Joel Hoffer, who had a decent season in the end. But Cooley, Jones, Merzlikin, Stone, these guys did not put up points. And then Philip Forsberg was maybe the most improved fantasy player in all of the league. You got him for $2. But really, the first half of his draft was really strong, including his keepers. Second half, like Robga's, was weak. But like Robga, he, and I think Nick more than anyone, is not married to his players. Even though we see, no. You know, I like to make a lot of trades. Holdsy likes to make a lot of trades. Nick actually doesn't care about his players. He has no emotional connection to them whatsoever. So he will make those deals in the categories that he needs. So I believe he made some very strategic trades as well. And I would have been interested, had the season gone on another week, could he have pushed into that number one slot?
Yeah, and I'm not going to say this time that his Nick's lack of goalie strategy was some. Oh, am I back?
Yep, you're here. Yep.
All right. So I'm not going to say that Nick's lack of goalie strategy lost him the pool this year, because I don't think the numbers show that. I mean, it was close, obviously, in those goalie categories, but I think it's the skater categories that really came down to it. So. He, you know, it's a tale of two teams here, and you're right. Like, you know, when we look back at preseason rankings after the draft, we had these two managers at the bottom. Wow, we like totally off on that, and because these two teams, you know, ended up at the top, right? And it would have been an interesting scenario to see if he had a couple more weeks to see if Nick could have hurdled over. Robka, but he just did run out a little bit of a runway there. And I don't know, like, again, if I'm going to pinpoint, I just don't know a moment where if he had done something a little bit earlier, or not done an action at all, or just kind of refrained from doing an action or a trade or a drop or whatever, what his moment was. He just kind of ran out of runway. But I think it, when it comes down to Robka, that, you know, that deal with you, you know, that was huge for you, but it was huge for him as well. And I think that's the moment that he really solidified his chances of winning this pool.
Okay, let's round this out with you. And, you know, we talked about the last few weeks, and we talked about the trade, obviously, was the big thing for you, the trade with Mike. But looking back on this, you and I have the luxury of having our winners and losers chart for the year. You were sniffing around the money all year. So you started the year in sixth, but week one is a crapshoot. The week one standings don't really matter. By week two, you'd moved up to fifth, where you stayed for the first month of the season. And then from week six onwards, you were fourth. So you were in fourth place from week six all the way through to, even into week 17, week 18, you're still in fourth. You make your move on week 22.
Yeah.
So it took till 2 weeks left in the season for you to make that jump. So in the second or third last week of the season, that is when you moved into a money spot, but you were never below really and truly fourth place for the majority of the season. So you were in and around there. And I believe that's the critical mistake that Mike made, is he was looking above him, trying to catch the guys, and he didn't give your team, I think, the credibility it necessarily deserved. He did that deal, which then, essentially, in the last 2 weeks of the season, flipped the standings and prevented him from making money for the first time ever in the pool.
Yeah, so he said to me in that deal, like, and again, not to harp on that deal, it's just known as the deal now. But he said to me, he's just like, I'm worried about that. Like, you may actually catch me. And I said, well, I don't think so. Cause at that time that we did the deal, I was still far enough away from him. I thought that my biggest, wish out of that deal was that you don't jump over me, because at that point of the season, you were taunting me saying, oh, it'd be amazing if I jump over you, blah, 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 blah. So I did that deal to just try to fend you off a little bit, you know, and then all of a sudden, you know, just what happens when you get Matt Matthews and McDavid on your team, things just, you know, start rolling. And, you know, I didn't think I would end with 117.5 points. You know, that's, you know, that was something, but, the spread between Mike and I quickly, closed and then, opened in my favor after that deal was done, for sure. I would not have, without a doubt, I would not have, obviously, as a standing say, I would not have moneyed, you know, for the fourth season in a row. Can you imagine that? Fourth season in a row. And if I did not do that trade with Mike.
Well, I think well deserved on your part for swinging that deal. For me, I think of all managers, I think this is the season that got away from Mike. I believe he should have won that. And just in closing on, so full credit to the top three. Great season, well deserved on the money winnings. The kind of lube news slash closing of the chapter of the season for me actually comes down to Connor McDavid, because I believe McDavid hurt two managers and helped one.
Yeah,
so I believe Gibby acquiring McDavid, but then trading him before he actually caught fire. As Nick said last week, learning is when you have someone you've paid this much money with, you dance with them all season. So I think that hurt Gibby's competitiveness overall that he traded him onto Mike. I then think this to me was actually the tipping point for Mike, because I thought he was going to win the pool. He should not have traded Jack Hughes for McDavid. McDavid was a luxury at that point, and I believe that he should have flipped Jack, because then you lose Jack Hughes, which is a keeper. So you've got, you know, guys in the bottom half of the pool who are looking for that type of player. He should have traded him for a number one goalie. There's no question. And had he done that and held on to Austin Matthews and the rest of his team, I actually think he would have won the pool this year. So McDavid hurt Aiden from the draft, hurt Mike when he made that trade, and then benefited you. So he ended up benefiting one manager, but there's a learning there. Like Nick said last week, as I said, if you pay and invest that much in a player, you've got to run with them all season.
Yeah. Without a doubt. I mean, and that's where, you know, that's where we see the contrast, right? And from Robka's draft, where, you know, he got rid of those players that he wasn't invested in, right? That were cheap, had that from the draft, got rid of them quickly. He did some big deals, but he got big returns in place. Like, no one, you know, obviously from this season, no one cost more than McDavid coming out of that draft. I think it may be different next year. We can talk about that in a little bit too. But there is a lesson there for sure. If you're not going to get the same level of return if you spend that much money on a player, then dealing them away for still a phenomenal elite player, but you're not going to get the same level of points, and you've already invested that money. So that other manager is now getting a $400-some-odd player for a lot less, right?
Yeah, so. Absolutely. Yeah, you're totally right. So there it is, guys. Congrats to the top three on their winnings. Congrats to Robka for entering the winner's circle and joining a very elite group of managers. And with that, let's turn the page. Let's take a quick look at preliminary keepers for 24-25.
Yeah,
we finalized the list, sent it out yesterday.
Yeah, we didn't even talk about game management and all that. And just before we kind of switch over here, that was actually done well this year too, I thought. For the most part, managers manage their games pretty well right to the end of it. And so I don't think that's a variable into Robka's winnings here. And you can't take anything away. Like, what if this manager played more or less or whatever, right? So I think, you know, all kudos. We've talked about Nick. We've talked about Mike, myself. But when it comes down to it, there is only one champ, and that's Robka. And you can't take away that from him this season. No one's going to remember you know, that Nick lost out by 1.5 points because he's number two. No one's going to remember number three, but everybody remembers who's the champ is, and that's Robka.
Okay, here we go. So Luke Championship, we are following the ESPN order, which I have finally figured out. It took me a while. This is the order that people signed up for our draft back in 2010. So that's when I look at my ESPN site. So I obviously was first because I opened the ESPN site. Gibby was the second person to sign up, and then you, and then so on. So we're just going to follow that order of seniority on the ESPN platform. So my overall impression of the keepers is they are incredibly unimpressive this year. How are you feeling about them?
Yeah, it's when I look through this, like, so this was sent out, and I'm just like, this is first thing I notice, right? The amount of money managers are keeping. Right. So that's the first thing that comes to my mind when I observe this is that people are managers are wanting to keep as much cash because they know what's coming into this draft year. And because of that, that makes me really nervous. Right. When you have this, I don't think we've ever seen managers hoard this much money in the past. That's one. Two is the lack of, I think there's superstar names on this. There's a, and we'll talk about that as well. But it just doesn't have the same feeling and flair of previous years. I agree with you on that.
No, which is going to make for an absolutely explosive draft night. It's going to be electric. I can't wait. It's going to be so much fun. So for me, my overall impressions are people are keeping those players you typically get at a bargain price in the second half of the draft. That's what it feels like. And there are a couple of exceptions here. And as we're going through teams, I'll point out the ones I think are really strong and you can do the same. But with me, so Nico Hischier, Thatcher Demko, Noah Dobson, Lucas Raymond for $91, $909 is what I go into the draft with. And I don't actually see me making a change where some players, I think there might be a bit of gamesmanship here. Some managers, I think this is my four.
Yeah, the biggest one off of this for me that jumps out to me obviously is Demko at $28. But I agree with you when it comes to just your how you capture this. These are players that are a little bit later in the draft that people are trying to keep that are either going to, you know, definitely go more for than what they would you're going to keep them for. They're still prized players. So I look at Hischier, Dobson, and Raymond, great players. Like, and those are great, and all great keepers, actually, too. Because, I mean, you're not going to get them for any cheaper than that. So why wouldn't you have them on your team for that kind of money? So that's kind of like the feel I get from your team. Is kind of like the same as for the others as well. But you have really good keepers. The piece on this one is you're going in with $909, and that's scary for me.
Well, I would be scary if it was someone else. You know what I'm going to do with that. So anyways, yeah, like, you know, for me, I've got Dobson, who was a top five defenseman this year. Demko, who was a top five goalie this year. Hischier, who didn't have a great season, but was almost a point per game, battled through some injuries. But I'm keeping him because I think he's a specialty shorthanded point kind of guy. And then Lucas Raymond, second half of the season, caught fire. So I'm hoping that Raymond makes that next step next year. And if he does, I've got a keeper for the next 4 years. Flipping over to Gibby, this is, to me, is the first manager who has a scary crop of keepers. So Jack Hughes, Jeremy Swayman, you've got a number one center, a number one goalie, Connor Ingram, if the newly minted Utah team spends the way they say they're going to spend, we could see this team really take a jump to the next step. And he's a starting goalie there and had a great season. And then Josh Morrissey continues to be one of the best fantasy defensemen. So, and $826 left in the draft. So I see Gibby as a very scary manager heading into the draft next year. For me, I believe this is my favorite keeper group.
Yeah, like, this is an interesting one because didn't the Utah franchise just sell 20,000 tickets, like preseason ticket?
No, yeah, there's a waiting list. Yeah,
there's like a waiting.
Yeah, the deposits. Yeah,
yeah, there's a huge hype, obviously, and I think that's going to bring a lot to that team and those players. So having Connor Ingram on here is a no brainer to me. He has a scary crop. He's got, which is interesting to me in terms of his picks, right? He's got superstar Jack Hughes. Let's put him aside for a second, but he's securing a defensive position here too, which we know was incredibly challenging this past year. So we can talk about the number of defense that have been kept and the strategy that goes along with that. But I think that's a very smart keeper pick for him at $11. Connor Ingram, I think you're going to see a completely different team because it's going to be a completely new environment. They're going to feel like an actual NHL team and they're going to play to that level. So, you know, Gibby had an off year. I think he's going to, when you look at his draft last year, he's going to learn from those types of pieces. We all did, right? But he still has a lot of cash going into it. And we know that he has some serious skill when it comes to the draft and to the FA wire. So with that, with all those pieces in the mix, I think, you know, he's one of the early favorites, I would say. Early favorites.
Okay, let's flip over to you. I like your keepers as well. So Robertson, Reinhardt was a breakthrough player. Maybe he notches Forsberg as the top breakthrough player this year. Can he repeat it next year? We'll find out. He's going to get a very big contract somewhere. And then you keep the Islanders tandem. I figure, why not? Varlamov has been an ideal add drop guy, but if you have Sorokin, who is the number one guy in New York, and Varlamov is there next year as well, that's a great little, you've got a tandem there. That's a nice little bit of insurance for you should Sorokin go down with an injury. And $842, you've got quite a bit of cash. So you've got a solid crop of keepers as well.
Yeah. So I was him and Hahn over Varlamov, and I'm like, well, he's only $25. You know, the other side of it, I was thinking of Pavelski, top 20 player. But I decided just, because of a goalie strategy here, let's just, I'm not out a lot of money. I'm not really out of a keeper spot. I don't really have any other keepers really for consideration that I would have. I'm losing a lot of players on the team into the draft. So that was my rationale there. I'm obviously hopeful that Reinhart can repeat. That's going to be the big question. If not, I've still secured myself a nice, tidy right winger on a great team. For right now, it depends where he gets, the contract, everything else rolls out for $30. So I'm not out of a lot of money if this blows up in my face.
Okay, let's go to Warham and the Salt Lake Sandpipers. He has the youngest group of keepers. Clayton Keller had a great year, $10 keeper. Matt Boldy, in my opinion, will be one of the best left wingers going forward for the next several years.
Yeah.
He's locked him up. Enough said about Connor Bedard at 223. I believe that's a good price. And then taking a bit of a flyer on Trevor Zegras, who had a bad year last year. So I like his keepers. I like that they're young, so there's a lot of upside. My concern is he's only got two positions, so left wing and center going into the draft. So defense, goalie, and right wing will be a massive priority. And he comes in at a lower draft budget of $709.
Yeah, so when I look at that too, right? So you start taking a look. You have one center. Gibby has one center. I don't have any. Robbie has two places here. We know there's a lot of centers going in that are going to be prized this year, right? That's a big position where players coming into the draft or for first time in a long time, that's where they sit. So he's going to be targeting, if he's targeting those big names, it's going to be for the utility position. Does he need to still target some of that? I think so. Bedard is still young. He's going to be an absolute lights out superstar for sure. $223. He will go for more than that next year. So I think it's a good pick. Zegras, I think that's a roll of the dice pick, and I kind of like that as well. He did have a really off year, but at $10, he's not out anything on that. But the challenge is heading in for two centers where you have a lot of centers coming into the league into the draft that are going to be in demand. So I don't know. I think you're right on that.
Okay, so Cutlass Supremes, I think we're seeing our first bit of gamesmanship here. I don't believe for 1 minute that Gump is going in with $356. And in my opinion, two of the players here will be kept. Two will be released. I don't believe he's going to keep Braden Point at $220. You can get him at the draft for cheaper. I do believe he should keep Zach Hyman for $152. The second or third highest goal scorer in the league this year. Linus Allmark at 173, I don't believe he'll keep, but if Allmark gets traded and has a number one goalie position somewhere, he might do that. And I think he's going to keep Konechny, who is not a goalie, as I've written here. He's a winger. I believe Hyman, Konechny go into the draft and the other two end up getting released. And I wouldn't be surprised if he's our first manager to actually go in with fewer than four.
Yeah. He might. I think so. If I'm looking at this, Point at 220, just knowing again, and this is where you managers are going to have to take a look at who's in this crop this year for the draft, and I think this is some gamesmanship too, because I don't know if Braden Point would. Knowing all the other players that are in this draft is going to get $220, be worth $220 at this point. I don't think managers will have that much money to spend on it, knowing the names that are there. So he actually could be a value steal on that. Hyman, 100%, you're keeping him at 152. Allmark, it's the same thing again, right? Like when you look at a goalie at $173, just, and this is, I just don't know. Like, and this is the exciting part of it. I just don't know if goalies will be going for those. I'm definitely not using my goalie strategy that I've done in the past of spending $400 or $500 on goalies, because I just don't, I think there's going to be some deals. Is there going to be kind of like Bobrovsky level deals? Probably not, but Allmark at 173 seems a bit rich for me.
Yeah. Okay. So let's flip over to Doug now. And to me, this is kind of a 1A, 1B situation where I look at Aiden's team and Doug's team. These are my two favorite keeper teams so far. Rasmus Dahlin is and will be one of the best fantasy defensemen next year. Jake Ottinger is one of the best goalies in the league and certainly the best value at $12. Seth Jarvis is establishing himself at right wing in Carolina in their top six. And Brad Marchand continues to be an incredible player. So for $167 going into the draft with $833, I find this prospect very scary as a competitor to Doug. I love his keepers.
Yeah, I would say I'm giving Bowlby just a notch above Gibby right now, because I run down like the wild, I won't say the wild cards here at all. Like, I mean, Jarvis, Ingram kind of pieces are the ones that are the, like, that would be the last choices for keepers on each of those teams. They're great choices. They're both $25, different positions, obviously. I'm just going to give a little bit of edge here to Bowlby bunch. But I run down Bowlby's players. Those are all prime fantasy, proven fantasy choices as well. And scary that he and Gibby have really similar picks here, right? And when those two start thinking the same way, it's going to be an exciting draft night for sure. Great keepers.
Yeah, I really like what Doug is doing here, and I would probably not make a lot of changes if I was him. That's a very solid foundation to go into the draft with.
Well, and look at where he's opening himself up for his need too, right? So we've talked about, it's the same with Gibby. It's good choices, right? Gibby's kind of secured his goaltending, so he doesn't have to go super aggressive on that. You know, with Ottinger on a team, like you've got some really good numbers. Like obviously Bowlby, he has a love affair with goalies. He will want to go after, you know, a goalie. I think he's going to get some value out there for sure, but he's left some of the center positions open, right? He's obviously going to target center. And I think this might be one of the first drafts in a very long time where centers, are going to be targeted aggressively. I was just going to say that.
Okay, let's go into our last half of the pool, and we'll start with this year's champ. Robka is going in with a goalie, two defensemen, and left winger, Panarin, Fox, Shea, and Bobrovsky. I think it's a solid core. Even though Bobrovsky was the number one ranked goalie, there's always questions about him. He seems to win the Vezina and then have a terrible season. Will his body hold up? He's aging, but why not at $48, the number one ranked goalie? Brady Shea for me is a fine late draft pick. Adam Fox is on the other end. He's an elite defenseman in that kind of top five category with you know, the Kale McCars and the Quinn Hughes of the world. So that's a great pick. And then Panarin had his best season ever, and at 221 is probably $100 below what he will go for in the draft. Now he's not going in with a lot of money, 621, so he's gonna have to do some value shopping next year, and I wonder if he changes his mind on Panarin to have more money, or if he's really happy to have Panarin locked up and he knows he doesn't have to bid for some other superstars that'll go for $300 or $400.
So what do you, when you take a look at his, would you like Bobrovsky? Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think he's off and on, but he had a really on season, obviously, this year. $48, that's a no brainer. The one for me is Panarin. Would you have kept Panarin? I think we can all agree on his other three, on Shea and Fox, but would you have kept Panarin at 221?
What's the dueling philosophy, right? Like, do you know, what's the saying? A bird in hand. So he's got Panarin, who was one of the best fantasy players this year, and he's got him at what is now a value contract. But also, would Panarin potentially go for this next year at the draft, given the number of really high quality superstars? I don't know. Like, that's a tough one. But at the same time, he goes into the draft with someone who's going to get 100 points. So How can you fault that one? I think he's going to wrestle with that over the summer and even leading up to September 15th, what to do with Panarin. I wouldn't be surprised to see him on. I wouldn't be surprised to see him off that final keeper list.
Yeah, he's gonna have a long, hard think about this one while eating some duck. Let's just say that.
Yeah, so we're going into our first manager who, for the first time in league history, is not going in with four keepers, and that is Mike, at this point, is identifying Chris Kreider as his only keeper at $20. I believe we might see Stuart Skinner in there because Skinner is he's not that expensive, $50 or $60. Especially if Skinner plays well and then Edmonton doesn't acquire a goalie in the offseason, I would add Skinner to that because we've never seen an expansion manager win the pool in the first year because it's so hard to do, and this is almost an expansion style strategy that Mike would be doing. He's starting from scratch.
Yeah, so Mike kind of like signaled this out on the last episode that, you know, he's blowing things up and he's starting new, and obviously, you know, the one keeper selection is kind of signaling that as well. He wants obviously as much cash going into the draft. I thought he had actually a really good draft. Let me just go back here on this. How did he draft last time? Maybe I'm wrong on that. A good draft. Yeah, so he kept Hughes, Vanacek, yeesh, and Pettersson, right? So he's losing, you know, two of his keepers, and he's traded away the other keeper. So Vanacek was just not a keeper this year. Then he went Matthews, Ovechkin, Chychrun, Toffoli, Byram, Grubauer, McCann, Trouba, Barzal, Kreider, Kane. And then I don't even know how to pronounce that last guy's name from New Jersey. So he had a decent draft. I'm thinking he's, you know, obviously he's got his eyes on all of those other players that are coming into it. And, you know, will he add Skinner? That's a really good question.
I would add Blake Coleman as well. Coleman got 6 shorthanded points. That's worth a lot in the pool.
Yeah.
And go in with $920 instead of $980. But you've got, you know, some core pieces, not the ideal pieces, but you've got some core pieces that can carry you through.
Well, if anything, you know, can be said of Mike, he's a, you know, aggressive at the draft. I think he has a plan of going into to things. This is signaling to me that he's all in on the big names as well. And it's really signaling to the other managers is that if you want them, you're going to have to pay for them, right? That's kind of Mike's style, anyways. So I think he will fare well in the draft, even though we're right now only seeing one keeper. I think he's proven that way, and he's still going to be very competitive next season, I think, as well with this strategy, however it shapes out.
Yeah, so Nick is our next manager who's not going in with a full crop of keepers. He's identified Stone, Byfield, and Kempe for a total of $96, $904 going into the draft. So this is kind of what we're recommending for Mike is fill those two slots with Skinner and Coleman, just because they would be picked up at the end of the draft for a similar price.
It's low risk too, really. Look at Byfield, $25, Kempe at 61. It's really low risk. Kempe is always touted at the beginning of every season is a player to target. You know, he's always on my list and has been. I traded him to Nick in that other deal. So, you know, I like this strategy. I mean, there is something maybe that Mike can reflect on as well, is just backfill some of those positions with some low risk.
So I think what we see in Nick as well, and he's fairly honest, you know, this is one of the weaker crops of keepers, but he's recognizing that these would be end of draft pickups for similar prices. So
yeah,
throw them in and then get super aggressive for some of those superstars is, I think, what his strategy will be. You know, two right wingers and a center, he's got some work to do. I would say Nick knows that to climb up to the money next year right now with this crop of keepers is a challenge, and that the draft is going to be absolutely critical for him.
Yeah. So like we know Nick is not afraid of spending. He spent, you know, $330 on Rantanen, right? So he'll go on players he wants that are on his list. And he has said this as well. He, you know, he's one of those types of managers that doesn't really deviate from that plan. If he's on his list, he's going to go, you know, hard and fast on it, right? So he'll go after that. And that's, you know, hence Rantanen at 330. You know, I think he's shaping things out here. He's got his supporting cast here as well, but the work is going to come in is getting some of those, as he calls them, name brand players on his team to lead the way.
Okay, let's get into our final three here. And for me, this, you know, this grouping scares me. I believe that added to Doug and Aiden, PMF, Heisenberg, and South Stars would round up our top five in terms of keepers. So let's start with PMF. He's got Bouchard, who had an incredible season at Edmonton. Luukkonen, who established himself at least this year as the number one in Buffalo. Philip Forsberg, who we talked about earlier, had one of his greatest offensive seasons ever. And then Wyatt Johnson, who's just a shade over 20 years old and putting up 30 goals on the best team in the NHL in Dallas. So $107. He's got a defenseman, goalie, left wing, center, and $893 to spend at the draft. That's pretty scary.
Yeah, I like the strategy for him. Obviously, if he had an extra keeper position, he would have obviously just by looking at it chosen a right winger. But he's got all the positions kind of covered here. I do like the fact that of his selections here. They're obviously again, it's low risk, high value in return. Like if Forsberg can repeat at anything, you know, of this past season. A $10 keeper, that may be the biggest deal here, right? I love the gamble on it for sure, but that may be the biggest, and we'll see how this plays out after draft time for sure, and then maybe halfway through next season to see if that is actually the smartest decision coming out of our keepers for the next year. So great squad, lots of money still. He's got those positions, those key positions, covered. So he's going into the draft, very nicely.
All right. Yeah. I really like his team. I like that group and the fact that he's got almost $900 to spend, as well. And he kind of is sneaky good at the draft. So watch out for
him. Yeah, he is.
Next year. Okay. Let's go to Heisenberg. He wanted Thompson, and he dangled a very big player in Draisaitl for him this year. So not surprised to see Thompson. And I believe Thompson and the entire Sabres organization will take that leap next year and be far more competitive than they were this year. Nylander was an incredible player for Robka, maybe tailed off a little bit as the season went on, but we know what he will do next year. And then the Vegas goalie tandem, and Vegas will always be one of the best teams in the NHL. So for $216, he's got a center, a right wing, and a goalie tandem, $784 to play at the draft. And he's our first manager going back to our first season in the league to have that ideal. Remember, $780 is the ideal?
That's the sweet spot.
That's the sweet spot to win the pool, and he's going in with that number. So watch out for Heisenberg next year. I've said it before. I believe we may see Blair winning it again next year.
Yeah, this is a the first signal that this upcoming season is not going to be this one that we just experienced for the Heisenberg. He's Thompson's going to have a different season than he did this year for sure. I think there was injuries in there. Just wasn't playing as he had the previous year. Nylander's just a beast at $123. I think that's excellent value. There's no way he would go for $123 next year. That's just fantastic value based on the season that he's had. And then obviously for, you know, under $100, he's got well under $100. He's got the Vegas goalie tandem. So he's not actually having to search too hard for, goalie support as well. So yeah, with $784 coming into it, he has just positioned himself nicely for the draft. And I think, again, he's now in the conversation with Bowlby and Helmer with respect to, and I guess PMF as well, right? So we're really seeing a separation here in some ways because of these keepers and these choices of some early favorites.
Okay, let's go. South Stars is our last manager here. You know, in my opinion, a successful first year, learned how the pool worked, and by the time we get to the draft, he will have completed his first cycle as a manager in the league. I'm not convinced he's going to keep these guys because he asked me if he could make changes afterwards. So we know that he is willing to make deals and do things. So I'm not sure we'll see these four guys, but I really like them regardless. Kirill Kaprizov, as far as I'm concerned, he cannot trade him, and he has to go in to the season with him as a keeper. I think Joseph Wall is a really intriguing one, depending on what the Maple Leafs do in the offseason with their goal.
Yeah, I like that one.
Yeah. Valeri Nichushkin was a point per game player. He only played 50 some games, but he put up a point per game. So 25, that's great. And then finally, Tim Stützle, who is, you know, right now the best offensive player from that that draft year, playing better than Lafreniere, playing better than Byfield. So he's a 90 point player potentially for $12. So for $81 in total, he gets a left wing, goalie, right wing, center, and 919 to spend at the budget.
This is the manager that is, you know, is going to be scary in the off season pieces here, right? And I got a lot of noise going upstairs and the off season pieces here. So when we look at what's going to, when we're going to look at what's actually going to happen here, when we open up the trading again, I don't think we're going to actually see this as the same list as well. Right. So, to finish eighth in your first year, that's a success, right? Holtze's had a really successful season, and then compound it with actually assembling his whole strategy throughout the whole year is assembling these keepers here. He's going to be super competitive. He's in our top five, I think, or at least my top five of keepers and strategies heading into 24-25.
All right, so there's your keepers for the year. You had alluded to a little bit of a controversy yesterday, and I don't know if anyone else noticed, but
it was hurtful. It was hurtful.
I left you out of the auction balances. There was only 11 managers there.
Yeah, I counted that up. I'm like, oh, where did I fall in? Oh, I was left out. I was ignored, and I'm just wondering why that was.
Oh, it's like a Taylor Swift style Easter egg. I wanted to see if people could catch that. As a bit of a shade.
I bet all other managers, where are the whispers in this? Like, we need to know where I bet there was a flood of texts, emails, WhatsApp messages, whatever, to your account because they were upset as well.
No one noticed. No one noticed, I guess. You know, it's like what we say in education. As soon as you walk out the building, you are forgotten.
Yeah, 100%. I think it's actually even before you do.
Yeah. So listen, let's run down these balances. So right now, Mike goes in with one keeper, $980. South Stars, $919. I'm not that far behind with $909. And then Nick with $904. So we have four managers, I believe, for the first time ever with $900+ in the draft.
Yeah, that's going to be something here because we know that the players that are going in, I think you're also going to see an off season where there's going to be a prolonged strategizing here, a lot of planning that's going to happen. And I think it's going to start fairly early in terms of what, you know, trying to predict where and, you know, who's going to go for what, what does that leave me? What positions am I actually going to target, you know, and actually look down by categories as well. So there's a lot of quality that's going into the draft when these managers are over $900. It's scary. And PMF is so close to 900.
Well, I was going to say, you want to run down, we've got, you know, four in the 900s, but we also have four in the 800s. So you want to take us through those four next managers?
Yeah, you have PMF at 893, the Whispers at 842, Whiskey Dick Van Dyke Bowlby at 833, and then the Notorious G.I.B.B. Gibby at 826. So again, not far, that much far behind some of the managers that are in the 900s. I think the standout right now is I was in the pool, and I honestly think Mike probably put himself at $980 just to ensure that he is at some point finishing the season at the top of a list.
Oh, that's actually a good point. Yeah. There you go. So he might show his family that and say, look, I finished with 980 points.
Yeah, I won. Look at me. And then, like, you know, his family asked, did you win $980? No,
No, I. That's the we. You get points by dollars.
Yeah, that's how this works. I'm the champion. Doesn't that say 2024-25? And he's just like, shut up, go to your room.
Yeah. Maybe he says he did win $980. you know, and then he just goes out and blows unnecessary cash that he doesn't have, just to say, I won 980. Let's go. Let's go spend some money.
Yeah, I need a new Segway.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
That's what he's gonna. Anyways,
can you believe the Segway founder died on a Segway? I mean, okay. Last four guys, we got Heisenberg, Sandpiper, Zoltok, Cutlass Supreme, 784, 709, 621, and then 356, respectively. We know that Gump is playing a little bit of a game here. The other ones, it'd be interesting to see if now that they see the landscape of money that's available, if they'll make some changes or if they stick with this strategy, and we will know September 15th when keepers lock in. So in summary, keeper positions, always our goalies are number one. We've got 12 goalies locked up, 9 centermen, 9 left wing centermen, 9 left wing, 8 right wing, and only 6 defensemen, for a total of 44 keepers right now.
Yeah, this is the surprise for me, as I mentioned at the top of the segment here, is when you only have 6 defensemen, knowing how tight actually that position was. And we saw, what did you call it? You called it like everybody's, you know, searching for the defenseman at the end of the season. And I forget how you termed it or coined it here. And I think that may be something that is going to haunt people through the next season, knowing how lean defense word on the FA wire. It was hard to find those defensemen that were needed. So to only see 6, you know, that's a bit of a surprise for me.
Yeah. So there you have it. Prelim keepers. We'll know in 4 or 5 months time who's doing what. And that does it. That's podcast 110, Brent.
It's unreal. We've done 110 of these. What's even harder to believe is that we're now actually in the off season, and what do we do?
Yeah. So we had discussed doing, you know, a separate podcast where we looked at preliminary keepers, but Robin's on his celebration bender right now. So we've combined those two podcasts together. We've also talked about maybe doing a Council of Losers podcast. Maybe we'll do that down the road, but I think everyone's ready for a break. So at this point, this is going to wrap up. What season of podcast is season 5?
This is season 5. Yeah. So we'll start fresh again, season 6. So maybe we'll have a summertime or just the at the end. Years. Yeah. The Council of Losers, seeing if they can. You know, I like the idea of the Council of Losers, right? Where the bottom teams can say what's going to be different this year, right? And you know, there's you know, the managers at the bottom four are amazing gents. So I mean, it would be a good conversation and give them some airtime as well on this, like, highly listened to podcast.
That and it gives us it also the Council of Losers gives us a chance to have drinks with someone on a Friday night.
That is true. Yeah, because we actually don't have anybody to do that, so which maybe puts us in that category as well.
All right, Brent, that does it. It's been fun.
Yep.
Glad so the podcast is back.
Yeah, we're happy that it's back. It's a great addition, obviously, to the pool. Listen, everyone, that is 110. That is season 5 of the greatest podcast in the world, about the greatest fantasy hockey pool in the world. And we can't wait to season 6. The topics that we're going to cover are going to be outstanding. There's going to be some new creative ones. And I like the idea of eventually we'll get the WAGs on here too. Council of WAGs maybe, with the Council of Losers coming into season 6 as well. So that's it, everyone. Take care. Have a safe summer. Start strategizing for 24-25. It's going to be a blockbuster.
See you, boys. Have a good one.